Hey, it's Anna Sale, and I want to thank you for listening to Death, Sex, and Money, where I explore the big questions and hard choices that are often left out of polite conversation. You can hear new episodes ad-free every week on Amazon Music, where you can find Death, Sex, and Money and all of your Slate favorites without the ads.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hi, Death, Sex, and Money listeners.
This is Burhan calling from the Pacific Northwest.
This is Priscilla from Northern Virginia.
Jim from Clarksville, Maryland.
Anna's a little busy at the moment.
Baby.
Congrats, Anna and Arthur.
So we're chipping in.
Asking you to follow in our footsteps and make a donation to the Death, Sex, and Money podcast.
We did it.
Because we want WNYC Studios to keep making the kind of show
that makes us feel connected to total strangers.
Total strangers.
And if you make a donation in the next 7 days,
a WNYC partner,
the Tao Foundation,
will double it. So you can be extra generous without actually spending any extra money.
It's also really easy.
Just go to deathsexmoney.org/donate.
Or text the letters DSM to the number 69866.
WNYC can't produce this show without help
from donors like us.
We feel like we're contributing, like we're part of something wonderful.
Again, that's deathsexmoney.org/donate.
Or text DSM to 69866.
Now back to the show.
Usually when you press the number 6 on the elevator, you get like the side eye from people. Like Planned Parenthood equals abortion, baby killers. Like, I don't know what people think goes on in here.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
We need to be defunding Planned Parenthood, not only state by state, but I think across the country.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
It's really an attack against a woman's right to choose.
And me to talk about more.
They do some very good work. Cervical cancer, lots of women's health issues.
I'm Anna Sale. The clinic's in a nondescript old office building in downtown Brooklyn. Next to a drugstore, a Starbucks is across the street. You enter a dusty lobby, go up 6 floors in a small elevator, and arrive at the Brooklyn Planned Parenthood Clinic.
This is what I
call Planned Parenthood?
There's the, almost like the airport security that you have to walk through.
This man is here for an STD test after a partner tested positive for chlamydia. He asked us not to use his name.
Put your metal objects and anything in your pockets in the tray and then walk through. I didn't necessarily expect it. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, that's right, that makes sense.
Particularly after a gunman entered a Planned Parenthood in Colorado last year. He killed 3 people and injured several more. After security, the waiting room in Brooklyn looks like a typical doctor's office. Depending on the time of day, the lobby's chairs can get packed with patients.
You know, I think I might be the oldest person in that room.
And how old are you, if you don't mind?
52.
52.
And still sexually active.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah. And still making dumb mistakes. That's probably the worst part of it.
Over a number of days last winter and spring, we collected interviews at this Planned Parenthood clinic in Brooklyn. It's one of five in New York City and one of more than 600 clinics nationwide. What happens inside Planned Parenthood clinics has long been at the center of a raging political debate in the U.S. And recently, the scrutiny has been particularly fierce. Federal funding for Planned Parenthood has nearly caused two government shutdowns, and about a dozen states have cut Medicaid funding for Planned Parenthood in the past year. But for as loud as the debate about Planned Parenthood has gotten, we don't often hear from patients who use their services. So we wanted to collect some of their stories. I interviewed people who volunteered to talk with me while they waited for their appointments at this Brooklyn clinic. I talked to some staff members, too. The patients came in for a number of reasons. STD checks, annual exams, birth control pills. No one was seeking an abortion on the day I talked to them. But for the people I met, abortion was often an important part of their history with Planned Parenthood.
I've been coming here basically my whole adult sexual life since I was 16, and now I'm 38.
This patient asked for me to call her Treasure. She didn't want to use her real name. She came in for a pap smear and a checkup. Treasure grew up in Brooklyn. She still lives here. Her mom had her when she was 15, and her dad was incarcerated when she was growing up. Treasure says Planned Parenthood is where she learned about sex.
Why did you first come here when you were 16?
Everybody was just talking about sex or whatever, and my mother used to talk about sex too, but she should be like, oh, you got to get yourself checked out. You don't want to be having sex. You don't know what's wrong with you. These people is dirty. And I didn't know what she really mean by that. You know, people is dirty. So I just came here and, you know, they explained sex-transmitted diseases and the outbreaks and, you know, just to be careful, use condoms, use birth control. And everybody is so nice to answer. No matter what question it is, you may think it's dumb. No question is too dumb and too silly.
Were you sexually active when you first came here at 16?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was having sex. One boyfriend and that's it.
Have you ever been pregnant?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Do you have kids or did you choose not to have kids?
No, I haven't. I always chose abortion. I always chose abortion because I always felt I wasn't ready. I never really had a stable partner until now. It's just hard to have kids in New York and you're a single woman.
And how old were you when you had your first abortion?
I think I was 19. To this day, I still think about the kids that I bought. And it hurts me, but I knew I wasn't in a place to take care of them.
Through her mid-20s, Treasure didn't regularly use contraception. After her first abortion at Planned Parenthood, Treasure had a second abortion, then a third and a fourth, one in a hospital and two at another women's health clinic.
When you young, sometimes, like they said, young, dumb, full of cum. So you just like, oh my God, it's not going to happen to me. I didn't use condoms. I was having all these abortions. I started like losing a piece of me, and I didn't want that to happen. I didn't want to keep having an abortion. I didn't want to keep just killing babies. I felt like we're not going to do this. And that's when I really got grounded with Planned Parenthood because I said, you know, please help me. I'm having all these abortions and I don't want to keep having them, you know. And that's when the counselor spoke to me and she was like, you know what, we have different things. So that's when I started trying a depo, and that's when I started just coming in every 3 months, getting my shots done. And it was like, it was cool, you know. I felt it like I was on the right track with handling my life. Like, I'm going to have a kid when I'm ready.
Are you on contraception now?
No, I'm not.
Are you trying to have a kid? Are you trying to get pregnant?
Right now, I'm finally trying to have a kid. Finally. Congratulations to me. I'm finally trying to have a kid. Finally, after all these years, I feel like I'm in a place, you know. I finished school. I have a nice job. I feel like I could take care. I'm not going to be the best parent. I'm not rich. But I'm going to make sure they eat it. And, you know, have a roof over their head and give them a lots and lots of love.
What are the hard days like for you?
The hard days are, I guess, if I see patients that really seem to be stuck in their lives and making unfortunate decisions for themselves and they're unhappy.
What do you mean by that?
Well, women who keep having a lot of unwanted pregnancies and seem to not really think ahead about protecting themselves from it, or maybe they're in relationships with men who might even force them to do things, but the patient isn't telling me those things.
Helene Gross is a midwife and nurse practitioner at this Planned Parenthood clinic. She graduated high school in 1973, the same year as Roe versus Wade. She's worked here for more than 10 years. Have you been a patient at Planned Parenthood?
I haven't been a patient at Planned Parenthood, but I have terminated a pregnancy a long time ago, and I have no regrets.
Do you feel comfortable telling me about that?
Sure. It was in the mid-80s, and I remember feeling nauseous when Live Aid was on.
Oh.
And I actually remember when I got the results of the pregnancy test because it felt like somebody slapped me in the face. I was just so shocked because I think because I had never been pregnant before and it just sort of didn't seem possible. And I just knew I didn't want children. I went to my regular gynecologist and I had the termination there.
How do you remember feeling afterward?
Relieved. Relieved and tired.
Do you tell your patients that you've had an abortion?
Sometimes I do when it seems to fit the situation. I guess especially if I feel like I want them to know that I'm not judging them.
Over and over again, patients told me that coming to this clinic felt different than other doctors' offices. More comfortable, less judgmental. But still, when you walk through the door,
everyone turns and looks at you, which is fine. But, you know, people are like, what are you in for?
I met Sarah at this clinic as she waited for her appointment for an annual exam.
Everyone's like, are you knocked up?
Have you ever been pregnant?
I have, yeah.
Do you have any children?
Nope.
Sarah's 32, and she told me she's had two abortions. Her second was 3 years ago at Planned Parenthood. Her first was at another clinic in New York.
The other place I went to was not fun. I mean, it's not fun anyway, but it was way worse than being at Planned Parenthood.
What was different?
The staff and the price. They charged me a lot more at the other one.
Sarah remembers paying several hundred dollars for her abortion at the other clinic. She had insurance that helped her cover her second one at Planned Parenthood. She says in addition to the better price, she also remembers a different feeling.
Here, it was just very reassuring. And also, I kind of bonded with the other people in the waiting room. It was one young girl and an older lady that was married that had children. She just, you know, it's all different kinds of people. And she was really nervous. And I think I was like, I tried to calm her down because this was the second time for me. And I was like, it's fine, it'll be over before you know it. Like, it's terrible and it's painful and you'll have, you know, lots of different emotions about it, but it'll be over and you'll be fine, you'll be okay. And you'll get through it and you'll survive. I've done it and a lot of other people have done it, so.
I love that idea of like a little conversation in a waiting room about something so deep and personal.
And no, we all like, I don't know, I saw them later as I was leaving and I don't know if we like high-fived or hugged or something. We were like, we can do this, so.
Coming up, I hear about the protesters who gather outside this clinic regularly.
I'm here because we are praying against the killing of babies.
And I hear about the Planned Parenthood volunteers who stand right beside them to greet patients. As we were doing these interviews at Planned Parenthood, we heard from a listener with another abortion story. Josh in Brooklyn sent in this voice memo when we asked for stories about near-death experiences.
My mom sat me down and decided that it was time that I know that while she was pregnant with me, I was very, very close to being aborted. I was 30 minutes away. My mom was 30 minutes away from going to the clinic for the appointment that she had. She was 19 at the time. She was in her first year away at college. She met my dad. They got pregnant. They weren't married. And her parents were very insistent that the best thing for her to do was to have an abortion.
But Josh's mom decided right before the appointment that she didn't think an abortion was the best thing for her. And when Josh was an adult, she felt like she needed to tell him.
In that moment, as I, you know, I'm 22, 23 years old hearing this, and it was a very humbling thing to hear, to know that I had lived all these years not knowing that that they almost didn't happen, that I had no control over my life.
Josh's story came into our email inbox at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. That's also where many of you sent messages for the woman we called Suzanne. After our recent update with her, we received almost 100 notes that we forwarded on to her. Some were personal stories about addiction and leaving abusive relationships. Others were just notes of encouragement and care. Suzanne responded and said that reading them made her feel better. She wrote, "It's hard to be in a situation like this and feel like you deserve care or concern." So thank you so much to all of you who took the time to write in. On the next episode, Titus Burgess. The actor plays a character of the same name on The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and he tells me about coming out to his mom as a college freshman and about what their relationship looks like now.
Having me as a son has caused all sorts of augmentation in her.
An augmentation? You mean you've complicated the way she sees life?
I have challenged the way she sees life. I don't want to say complicated.
Let me tell you a good story. It was late on a Sunday afternoon, and my family and I had been away and rolled into the driveway, and everyone was worn out from traveling and getting hangry. But waiting for us was a solution. A Hungry Root box filled with healthy, grabbable snacks and a few different dinner meals to choose from. We tore into this thing like a pack of wild animals and ate all the snacks. But they were healthy, whole ingredients, fresh produce. And then we were set for dinner a few hours later, which only took about 15 minutes to prep and cook and get on the table. I was so grateful to my past self for doing my current self this solid by ordering this box. And it was easy. I took a short quiz to tell Hungry Root what kinds of meat my family eats, the sorts of flavors we like, any dietary restrictions we have, or just things we're trying to avoid, and when I wanted the box to be delivered. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. And don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you.
Do you ever feel like there's nothing new in the news? You know there are urgent things happening in the world around you, but all you hear is noise. That's why we made What Next. Our goal is to tell you the stories you haven't heard before, or maybe a different side to the story you thought you already knew all about. I'm Mary Harris, the host of What Next. And I love my job because it helps me cut through the noise of the news. And then I get to bring it to you. Together, we can figure out what next.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home. And you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Dakota Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM Plus to get access wherever you listen. Thanks. This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale.
The abortion rate in the United States is declining. Still, about 30% of American women will have an abortion by the time they're 45 years old, according to the Guttmacher Institute. But the stigma surrounding abortion is very real. A recent study of women who'd had abortions found that more than half felt like they needed to keep it a secret from close friends and family. And a third said they were concerned about what other people thought about their decision to have an abortion.
Can I have you introduce yourself? Tell me your first and last name.
Sure. My first name's Shaney.
Shaney Fintoni came into this Planned Parenthood clinic to get a lump in her breast checked out. She says she felt the stigma surrounding abortion 13 years ago. She was 28. She'd recently broken up with her boyfriend, and she found out she was pregnant.
I was coming out of a long-term relationship. You know how you do those 3 months of we'll still keep sleeping together to make the pain less, no? And then it happened then.
After her positive pregnancy test, Shaney went to her regular gynecologist in Manhattan to get an abortion.
I had to sit in a waiting room with expectant moms. Visibly pregnant, wanting to be pregnant, big giant engagement rings. Love moms. I have 4 godchildren. Children are fantastic. But there's just that thing that there's something slightly either what's wrong with you or you're definitely different from me, and it's not the funnest.
When you told the doctor you wanted to terminate your pregnancy, do you remember using the word abortion?
I don't think anybody used the word abortion. No, nobody used it. It was so bizarre. The whole thing was just bizarre. It was like, no, I don't have plans of continuing this pregnancy, because that's basically how he posed the question. So what's the, you know, should we set you up for a follow-up appointment in 3 months, prenatal beds? And I was like, whoa, no. And no one used the word abortion at all.
When you think back on that time when you were 28 and choosing to get an abortion, how do you think about it now?
I'm happy. I'm happy. I'm just grateful that it was an option for me. You do the math for a while to check in, I think. I think, you know, check in, make sure you're not a bad person. Like a emotional cutting would be the term. The date was a date for me for a while, for sure. And then I was fine until probably around like 36, 37, definitely 38. You know, you've now reached the age where this decision's real. You've made plans to not have children. But I'd never regretted having the abortion. The only thing that I would cry about later in those years was thinking I was never going to find a man that would be okay with the fact that I didn't want to have children. Or that you find a man at 38, because they say statistically that's impossible.
Shaney's 41 now, and she got married just over a year ago. She and her husband are both at peace with not having kids. In fact, Shaney's last appointment at Planned Parenthood before the visit where I met her was to get an IUD. There are plenty of mothers who come to Planned Parenthood. Jahan Perez is one of them.
I have 3 girls.
How old are they?
10, 12, 6.
Jahan comes to this clinic every 3 months for her depo shot. She told me for her, birth control should be called uterus control. She has endometriosis, and being on birth control helps ease the symptoms.
I get really painful cramps, and I just can't deal with that. Like, my world shuts down. Like, I don't eat, I don't drink, I don't get off the bed, unless it's to go change, like, a soaked pad or something. Like, I don't, it immobilizes you. So, yeah, I couldn't do that anymore.
Have you had your shot yet today?
Not as yet.
And how do you pay for it?
Well, unfortunately, I don't make enough money, so I fit into the sliding scale, and I haven't Medicaid, and it helps me out, so, yeah.
And then do you have to pay some cash?
I don't.
It's all covered?
Yeah.
Has it always been that way when you've been getting shots?
No. At one point, I was paying for it when I was working full-time, but now that I'm back in school, yeah, I'm a student, I'm poor.
half of all Planned Parenthood patients are on Medicaid, like Jahan. According to its annual report, Planned Parenthood received more than $500 million in federal and state money last year from Medicaid and family planning grants. Jahan started taking depo shots after her third daughter was born. Reliable contraception is an added benefit.
I actually got pregnant because I was irresponsible with the pills. So, yeah.
Did you have a moment where you thought, do I want to have this kid?
I did. I had a lot of moments like that. And I don't touch the abortion topic too much because I went to Catholic school, but I don't believe everything I read either. So I think it's a personal decision. So,
and for you, it felt right to become a mom.
Yeah, I had to do it.
At this clinic in Brooklyn, there are regular protesters who oppose abortion. They gather at least once a week, usually on Saturdays, beside the building's entrance on the street.
We are here to pray. We're not here to persecute anyone. We're not here to cast any blame or any judgments. We're just here to pray.
This protester, named Mary, is a middle-aged Catholic woman from Brooklyn. On the day we met her, she stood alongside two men. They all held rosary beads. Mary said they recite prayers like the Our Father and Hail Mary as women walk into the clinic.
90 to 95% of the women I see go into this clinic are African American, and I think that's a genocide. I was talking to one black woman who told me, she was in her 40s, she said she and every one of her friends has had an abortion. That to me is a tragedy. That's a major, major tragedy. How many people have we lost because of that?
Stationed right beside Mary and her fellow protesters were two Planned Parenthood volunteers wearing pink vests. They welcomed patients walking into the building.
We are glorified door greeters. We stand outside of the clinic, open door, smile a lot as people come in.
I talked with one of these volunteers. Her name is Rhea.
This particular group is not, they're better than other protesters. I mean, there was a guy who used to yell sort of racist things as people were coming in the clinic.
Like what?
Don't let them take your black baby.
And if someone is walking up to the building, appears flustered, upset by seeing or hearing the protesters, what do you do?
Usually they're confused. I get a lot of confused looks, like, what's going on? Like the squint, like, huh, what's going on? And we just smile at them. We smile and we say, oh, you know, welcome, come on in. We grab the door for them. And I think usually just that initial smile breaks whatever discomfort they're feeling. But I know that sense of discomfort. I've had that personally coming into the clinic for myself.
Have you ever had an abortion?
I have. At Planned Parenthood.
Do you want to tell me about it?
Well, I'm happy that I did it. I don't have kids. I don't really tell anyone ever.
Why not?
I don't know. I should, because that's stupid. It's really dumb. 1 in 3 women have an abortion. And for all the time that I've been involved in Planned Parenthood, I never really talk about it.
It feels private.
It is private. I mean, it's not like I had a root canal. But I don't know. Mostly because people make you feel bad about it. Like you're a bad person. They make you feel like you did something wrong. Really the driving reason was because I did not want to be a single mom. My mom is a single mom, and she gave up everything for me. She left me in Trinidad as an infant. She was a nanny for twins for another family while she left her child. She came back. She was able to bring me over. You know, like, that was really hard. I see how hard. My mom worked. Like, she sent me to private school all my whole life. I know that that took a lot out of her. I don't think I could have done that as a single parent. Like, I would not have been able to do that.
Yeah, and you had a very... You had observed the reality of what it is to raise a kid on your own, very up close.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you remember an interaction with anyone at the clinic when you had your abortion that sticks out?
The truth is that if you go and you're making a big decision in your life and you're in your head and you're thinking about different things and you're wondering if this is the right choice and you're there and you made the appointment and you've been thinking and now you're like crossing the line, somebody being a jerk to you could totally just melt you down. Just tear you down and make you feel awful. Or somebody with a smile and somebody who holds your hand, because I know that someone held my hand, because I do remember that, could just make you feel calm and make you feel good at a time where maybe you don't feel good.
That's a Planned Parenthood patient and volunteer named Rhea. Since I visited the clinic, Shani Fantoni has gotten good news about the lump in her breast. It looks to be a benign cyst, but the doctors where she was referred are still watching it closely. The man in the waiting room got a clean STD test back. I'm glad that I got myself checked out and even happier with the results, he wrote me in an email later. And Treasure says she and her partner are still trying, but she's not pregnant yet. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios. The team includes Katie Bishop, Chester Jesus Soria, Emily Botine, Casey Means, and Andrew Dunn. Our interns are Carson Frame and Brandy Gonzalez. And special thanks to Destry Sibley and Anna Hyatt for their help on this episode. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death, Sex, Money. And at the end of a long day at the clinic, we did one last interview with Dina, a nurse practitioner. She'd had a packed schedule of patients, but still made time for herself.
I actually had my IUD inserted today.
Today?
Yeah, so the plan was always to do it at the end of the day, but of course lunch was when we had all this time, so everyone's like, and you're still here? I guess are you doing okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I mean, I'm kind of like hyper aware of my uterus, but otherwise I'm fine.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.